Hi, it's Karen Webster for payments.com, and I'm here today with John McDonald, who is the CEO of BitNet. Hey, John, thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure, Karen. Thanks for having me.
So the occasion for our chat is that BitNet landed a pretty sweet $14.5 million Series A round last week. Congratulations, John. And I thought I'd catch up with you just to get a perspective on Bitcoin and the process of raising money for Bitcoin these days, and just sort of the general state of merchants in Bitcoin. So let's get started. First question, John, what's a nice traditional payments guy like you? You are an executive at Visa, for those who may not be familiar, Visa CyberSource to be specific, doing in the world of Bitcoin? What changed your focus from traditional currency and payments to virtual currency and payments?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, you know, how does one turn to Bitcoin from traditional payment networks? And frankly, for me and my co-founder, Stephen McNamara, and most of our colleagues who have done the same thing, which was to join BitNet from CyberSource/Visa, we saw it kind of as a natural evolution. You know, most of our work at CyberSource since its founding in the mid-90s by Bill McKiernan was to solve for a lot of the issues that merchants had to deal with taking credit cards online. The reversal in liability for card not present under the card scheme rules, increasing costs of PCI compliance, keeping the PANs out of scope for PCI compliance via encryption, and a whole host of services that we had designed really, in a sense, to reverse engineer the ability of cards to work online, for which they were never intended. And so I think what has happened in over the past 18 to 24 months has been this growing awareness that digital currencies such as Bitcoin solve a lot of those issues. Bitcoin itself specifically was designed to work on the internet. And we thought that was very exciting in the sense that it really was the first payment type, payment network to make use of the internet as a dedicated, medium of exchange, since really the advent of e-commerce. And as a result, it's going to help merchants and does help merchants today eliminate a lot of the costs associated with taking other forms of payments online.
So is it really that your proposition is that using BitNet, you're able to make it faster, better, cheaper for merchants who want to conduct business online? Is that really the proposition?
Yeah, that's exactly it, Karen. I mean, it's a whole host of benefits. And I think that starting with the sense the Bitcoin protocol has transformed the internet into a secure payment network and a low cost / darn near free medium of exchange. Okay, so the internet gave us all access to kind of a free dissemination of data. And what the Bitcoin protocol has done is transform that internet into a trusted ability to exchange value, to exchange money. And we see payments really as a killer app for that technology. It has other benefits, but specifically, our focus is as a merchant processor. It's on enabling merchants to accept digital currencies such as Bitcoin as payment for goods and services. And the top three benefits are, well, number one, a lowering of the transaction costs. Okay, so since there are no banks involved, there is no interchange. And, we're starting from a cost basis of zero, right? And then building services on top of that maintains a pretty competitive cost profile versus other traditional payment types. You know, it reduces friction for cross-border trade. I think that's important for, again, our target market, which is the enterprise level of merchants that do hundreds of millions or billions of dollars in revenue sales per year. Most of their expansion is international, is aimed at cross-border, and there are issues with taking other forms of payments. There are local payment types that only work within a specific region that are, dependent on regional bank networks. The internet is a global network, and anybody with access to the internet is a potential consumer for merchants. So I think that's a big benefit, especially for the multinational merchants. But the big one, and again, I think the one that is interestingly the highest priority when we speak with merchants and kind of go up the education curve on the benefits of Bitcoin, is the elimination of fraud from online commerce. That's always been a big issue, and frankly, it's getting bigger. I think that, you know, with the proliferation of breaches, you know, the issuer side of fraud control has become a lot more sensitive, understandably. And the hurdles facing merchants in working with partners such as CyberSource or others like Assertify and Account, and there are numerous other fraud control services dedicated to helping merchants try to, you know, maximize their chances of collecting on a payment using a card online. That's just simply a non-issue with Bitcoin and other digital currencies. They're the functional equivalent of cash. It's like taking cash over the internet. And before this Bitcoin protocol, that was never possible.
So, John, I want to ask you a couple of follow-up questions to that. If you look at the merchant transactions over the last several years, it's been pretty flat in spite of the fact that there are other providers of merchant processing services to enable merchants to accept Bitcoin. Why is that?
Flat meaning the number of digital currency transactions or Bitcoin transactions over the past few years?
Yeah, I mean, you haven't seen it progressively increase. It's really, if you look at the line, it's not exactly straight, but it's not exactly, you know, going up a nice curve and certainly not hockey sticking. So it suggests that those that are transacting using Bitcoin are really doing it in more of an investment trading fashion, not for transacting in the course of ordinary commerce.
Sure. And that is one issue with trying to parse the data, you know, on Bitcoin transactions, right? In the sense that it's not a straightforward process to separate sort of the commerce transactions from, say, the, you know, the trading by speculators. We can point to specific shopping days like Black Friday from last year, which we're coming up on again this year, where the spike was pretty clearly attributable to commerce, right? As opposed to a bunch of speculators deciding on Black Friday they would buy and sell Bitcoin. So, I mean, so there are a couple of spots we can sort of point to it and sort of, you know, reverse engineer the numbers. But what we've found is that in talking with our target market, again, which are sort of the internet retailer top 50, you know, the biggest of the big online commerce providers, one of whom is now an investor in Bitnet, that's Rakuten, and based in Japan. There's been a hyper focus of interest on Bitcoin over the past. It's been growing even since Bitnet's founding about this time last year. And frankly, a lot of the hesitation to initiate the acceptance of Bitcoin has been the lack of a provider, a merchant services provider like Bitnet, right? Where we come from the payments industry and we understand what it takes to integrate into a variety of, you know, backend systems and ERP systems and commerce platforms. And, you know, so we're coming from an industry where we spend a lot of time integrating payments technology into the commerce systems of big retailers. So we understand that it doesn't begin and end, you know, simply with the delivery of the payment to the retailer. Okay, there's a lot of other data that needs to be passed through for inventory control, fulfillment, tax, accounting, you know, a whole host of considerations. And we've designed our platform with those considerations in mind, but specifically for the retailer as well as the retailer partners. And that's another area where we've got deep domain expertise in the sense of, you know, integrating into the commerce platforms to whom the retailers outsource their payments. And for us in the payments industry, I think that's pretty well understood, pretty straightforward proposition. But I would say that, you know, with all due respect to the incumbents, the other, you know, processors who have been in the market providing Bitcoin services, they're not from the payments industry. Okay, they're entrepreneurial, you know, hardworking, smart people, but they come from different backgrounds, right? They come from, you know, software or, you know, Bitcoin itself or whatever. And so I think that when we have these discussions, we, being Bitnet, you know, my colleagues and I will have these meetings with the decision makers at these large retailers. There's immediately a higher sense of comfort. In some cases, we're familiar faces because they were customers of ours, previous companies like CyberSource. But even if it's not somebody that we happen to know personally from prior experience, we sync up very quickly on the pain points and the issues to be managed, and frankly speak the same language, right? And so I think that what we're going to see in the not too distant future, over the sort of the next 12 to 24 months, is a more rapid adoption of, or I should say, a more rapid level of acceptance of Bitcoin and other digital currencies by large, you know, multinational enterprise level retailers as a result.
Interesting. So I was going to ask you what your investors, and I was going to cite Rakuten as one of them, mm-hmm. saw in the team and the company. And I think you just answered it. It's a domain expertise and an understanding of the complexities of payments processing, which I agree is a, you know, it's a very, very complicated area and requires certainly domain expertise, but also I think in order to get the merchant's confidence that you actually can make it all work, that seems pretty essential. Was that a big piece of why you got such a big Series A?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, in the sense that, you know, we designed a platform, okay, a processing platform that incorporates all of the educational curve from the prior kind of couple decades of taking payments online. So, it became readily apparent to people who knew what they were looking at that, you know, we have built something that will be scalable and, you know, where the system's uptime, you know, is 5 nines. And so that I think that, you know, when we spoke with the folks both up and down Sand Hill Road and trying to find a lead investor for the Series A, as well as some of these strategic partners like Rakuten, who just came in on the Series A, I think you're absolutely right. It was one of those aha moments, like, wow, here is a huge opportunity in the sense of this new technology that's just been released on the planet, you know, in the form of Bitcoin. And here are some people who actually, you know, unquestionably understand what it's going to take to build a platform that will accommodate a lot of these considerations, starting with the payment, but going through, you know, all these other functionalities and capabilities requirements that are already hardwired into the design of the system, as opposed to, you know, learning as you go and trying to, you know, I'll give you a specific example. And in the last couple of days, some guidance has come from FinCEN, okay, that pretty clearly is going to require merchant processors to adhere to the rules around money transmission. Okay, so processors like Bitnet are pretty clearly not going to be able to rely on a processor exemption and will be held to the same standards as, say, a Western Union or some other type of money transmitter. We designed those capabilities into our system. So I won't say that did not catch us by surprise because it was an area of ambiguity. But, you know, coming from CyberSource and Visa, we have designed into our system a pretty robust risk management capability of which, you know, anti-money laundering and know your customer and a lot of other compliance-related considerations have been hardwired into the platform from the ground up. So, you know, when we go to retailers or even more importantly, when we go to banks, you know, and regulators to try to explain, you know, how we are managing the risk of Bitcoin somehow being a backdoor into money laundering, right? In a way that the, you know, the existing banking system is pretty heavily locked down through a series of measures taken post 9/11 with the, you know, Bank Secrecy Act and the Patriot Act being kind of at the central focal point of that. And, you know, we understand that. We understand the need to continue to maintain that level of security for the financial services system. So we've gone ahead and designed it, and we've built it into our platform. So, you know, when the FinCEN guidance came out, and I think that there, even the last couple of days, there's been a lot of, you know, hand-wringing and you know, about that. And for us, you know, we see that as a positive development, right, in the sense that, you know, there's now regulatory clarity, right, that will give confidence to banks and retailers alike. And Bitnet has built the system to readily comply, you know, with those FinCEN guidelines.
So my last question is just about Bitcoin in general. And it's been a bit of a bumpy path the last month or so as we've seen, you know, the Bitcoin volatility, you know, kind of spike and then, you know, from one end to the other. And it's been, you know, in the mid 300s, which is pretty low for Bitcoin if you look over the last year. And I thought it was interesting that the CEO of Coinbase even used the B word to kind of describe Bitcoin. He used bubble as a way to sort of suggest that Bitcoin was moving out of its bubble phase. And my question for you is, you're obviously very bullish on Bitcoin as an opportunity for merchants. You have a platform that is, you know, reflects your understanding and knowledge of the payments ecosystem. Are you building supply where there's no demand from the consumer side to actually use Bitcoin to transact?
Yeah, so we see it kind of playing out, you know, Metcalfe's law of a useful network increasing by value with every additional participant in the network. And I haven't committed the formula to memory, but it's something like, you know, N plus one is the exponent, with N being the number of participants. And so the notion being that, you know, Bitcoin as a network clearly has utility, right, to exchange value in a decentralized, trusted fashion. And people are acquiring Bitcoin. People are opening wallets. The last numbers I saw, it was north of sort of 6 million wallets had been opened worldwide. And the estimate was by the end of 2014, that'd be 8 million. And we've been comparing that to the early adoption of PayPal. All right, out of curiosity, we actually overlaid the Bitcoin wallet adoption curve on top of the early PayPal adoption curve. And it started out more flat, and I'll send you the slides, and has actually steepened. So the hockey stick is actually now sharper with Bitcoin wallet adoption than it was with PayPal over the same sort of initial four-year period. Interestingly, the transaction volume has remained, the shape of that curve is similar to PayPal's, but it has been doubled in value. So this, in the sense that the actual amount, the TPV, right, the total process volume of transactions, the value of transactions, has been about double the PayPal TPV over that same period. So in that sense, I mean, that's reassuring. Okay, if you look at where PayPal is today and the great success that they have built, that, you know, Bitcoin is tracking similar in one way and actually faster in another. Okay, and frankly, it's our premise, you know, not to quote the what the Kevin Costner, you know, "Build It, They Will Come" baseball movie, right? but part of our premise, and you know, and our investors have bought into this literally, is that, you know, to the extent we can build out the acceptance at the global enterprises, you know, the airlines, the hospitality, the multinational retailers, and actually give people a place to spend Bitcoin, that is going to solve one side of the equation, right? And so that people will be, you know, more readily able to spend their Bitcoin. And I think that, you know, then you sort of start to get into the geographical analysis and even demographical analysis of, okay, who are the consumers, right? Who is going to use Bitcoin in lieu of a credit card, you know, or some other bank transfer alternative, to the extent that that's, you know, a popular way to conduct e-commerce in lots of developed countries. It is like ideal, right? And these kinds of just direct bank transfers. And I think the answer, you know, depends on exactly those factors. You know, are you in South America, or are you in India or Africa or someplace where you may not have access to cards, or, you know, you may not even have access to banks. And so, there could be more rapid adoption from kind of a relative spend standpoint in some of these emerging economies where Bitcoin actually is the best way to, you know, join global commerce. Right. And be able to, you know, buy an airline ticket on a carrier, or do a lot of things that we take for granted, you know, using credit cards. So, and I think that probably there also is a notion of, as it's sort of a hybrid, stored value / currency. Okay. So I think a lot of people are buying into Bitcoin on that same premise that I noted earlier, that it must increase in value. Right, as more participants join the network, right, there's a scarcity built into it. You know, it's deflationary. There will only ever be 21 million Bitcoin, you know, in circulation. And so, with that notion, as more services, even non-payment related services, start to proliferate using the Bitcoin network, the value of the Bitcoin will go up. And so, you know, in developed countries, it could very well be that people are accumulating Bitcoin with a eye towards spending it over time as an appreciated asset, but, you know, tied to a payment capability. So on one hand, it's a stored value slash, you know, commodity type investment. And on the other hand, it's actually a payment alternative slash currency, right? But a lot of this is theoretical and, you know, yet to be proven, but to the extent we can get some data and we can compare it to other trend lines from previous technology like PayPal, everything looks very promising.
So, John, what do you plan to do with the money?
With the Series A funding?
Yes.
So we are continuing to staff up our engineering team, which is the bulk of our employees right now, our software engineers. We are also going to build out our go-to-market services, sales and marketing. We're going to open an office in Asia, at least one. We're likely going to open an additional office in Europe. We currently have offices in San Francisco and in Belfast, Northern Ireland. So there are, you know, customer support, merchant services, financial operations, and a lot of other go-to-market related functions where we need to step up. So I'd say the primary use of proceeds is salary, is headcount.
Well, it's been great to catch up with you and to get your perspective on, you know, what is a really interesting space. It's certainly in very, very early days, and you've obviously entered at a good time with a great background in payments and how complicated payments can be. I loved your story about, you know, FinCEN drops a stack of papers on your desk and says, here are the guidelines. And it's not that you don't blink, but you at least understand what needs to happen and have anticipated it, and not only anticipated it, but built a system that can accommodate that. So congratulations on the good work to date. And we look forward to catching up with you as you evolve and put the proceeds to work and staff up and get out into the market. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Karen. Much appreciated.